Bruce Pratt joining us for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101, and we're very happy to welcome a guest to the segment this afternoon, his second time on the program with us, this time around to talk about his wonderful book, Race Across America, Eddie Gardner and the Great Bunyan Derbies. Charles Kastner joins us. Charles, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, the book is so good, and we've talked about the Bunyan Derbies a number of times, and I never cease to be amazed at the athleticism, but also the endurance, the toughness of the people that did this more than 90 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I feel the same way. I mean, I've run marathons, I've run, you know, one ultra, and so I understand how difficult it is to run one of these things, like a 26.2 mile race. I mean, I would train for, you know, 3 or 4 months, and then I'd run, and then you get to the 20-mile mark, and you sort of hit the wall, and you feel exhausted, and then you finish, and you go, oh, thank God that's over. But just think of these guys for 3 months running 40-plus miles a day. I mean, that's almost two marathons. So it's crazy what those guys did so long ago. And I think that's what drew me to write about these guys, is just how tough they were, you know, and what they had to go through. I mean, no one had ever run across the country before. They thought ultra marathoning, you know, would strain your heart and you're risking your life. But these guys wanted this money, right? You got $25,000 back then. You know, a good salary was $2,000, $2,500. You could buy a house for $3,000 to $4,000. So this was a ton of money for these guys. So they were in it to help their families and make a better life for themselves. So it constantly is fascinating me for the 20 years I've been working on these books.
Well, in this case, the title of the book, Race Across America, really has two meanings. There is the race itself, running the first year from L.A. to New York, L.A. to New York, and then New York to L.A. the next year. But it's also, you in this one, you focus on Eddie Gardner and Toby Cotton Jr. and the other African-Americans in the race. Could you talk a little bit about the very special attention that was paid to them by the African-American community and the very daunting, hostile things they had to overcome as they ran through the Jim Crow states?
Yeah, sure. These guys, at least Toby and Eddie, came from the West Coast. And on the West Coast, African-Americans were free to compete against white runners. I mean, it wasn't an issue. It wasn't a problem. If they won the distance race, that was great. And so they were raised in this environment where interracial competition was okay. And then they come to Texas, where Jim Crow is, and they face an onslaught. These white farmers, people that lined Route 66, did not want them competing against white people. Because the thing about Jim Crow was difference, right? Whites and blacks cannot get together. You got to have segregated places for them, segregated places for whites, and whites are superior. And they don't want blacks beating whites. And so Eddie, especially, because he was the fastest guy, faced constant death threats. And after a while, Eddie just had to decide if he wanted to risk his life or stop, because he was falling behind the lead guys. And so he decided to start running and run his race. You know, these guys may shoot him, they may kill him, but until they do, he's going to run as a free guy, you know, chasing his idea of the American dream. He wants that $25,000. So these African-American communities along the course embraced him, because he was one guy willing to stand up to Jim Crow and put his life on the line. And so the black press picked up what Eddie was doing, and his story was broadcast across, you know, in Chicago and New York and Los Angeles. And so he became famous in that brief time for his stand. So it was really something.
And as you point out, Charlie, he deserves very much to be discussed in the same breath as peers like Jesse Owens and Joe Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean, because you think about it, I mean, they were competing in the North. And here Gardner is, he's going to the south. Route 66 is, you know, you can barely get two cars there on either side. And then you got lines of white farmers, you know, out there on their blankets watching the race. And here comes Eddie. And they're just free to shout what, you know, the N-word, whatever thing they want to say. And they were very upset about him beating white runners. And so Eddie just had to find additional courage to keep on going. And by keeping on going as he did, he became a symbol of hope and pride for his fellow African-Americans trapped there in that system. And, I mean, to me, once I realized that Eddie was black, and then I realized that he was going across the country and he was going to face these Jim Crow states. And then what was interesting is the white papers didn't mention it at all. It was like it didn't exist. But then you look at the black press and, oh my gosh, it's like he's in a war zone or something. I mean, you know, they're reporting all these problems that he was facing. And as someone who, you know, runs long distance, you know, it's tough enough to get up and run, but then to know you're going to run through crowds of people screaming horrible things at you. You know, it's not like the typical race when, you know, your buddies are out there and they're waiting on the finish line. Here he's hated by these white people. But on the flip side, when he goes through black places, they line the streets and they're screaming and shouting. So it's just these two different things going on in the book. And to me, the courage Eddie showed so long ago, you know, was a harbinger of things to come, you know, with people standing up and saying, no, I'm going to have my lunch here and you can beat me up and you can do what you want, but I'm going to make a stand. And that's what Eddie was doing in the birth year of Martin Luther King, 1929. So, I mean, I think it's just pretty gutsy what Eddie did. And what I wanted to do was make sure this was known, because I didn't think Eddie was getting the credit he had earned.
Well, and it's also the other aspect that I found fascinating, the way that, you know, the organizer pile is part snake oil salesman, part entrepreneur. But he, when Eddie isn't served along in order, he stands up for him, that Arthur Newton, a South African born, an English-born South African, or I forget which way it is the last guy I figure is going to be the one standing up in the Jim Crow South for a black athlete. So it does seem that the runners bonded in a way that might not have been expected. I mean, these guys came, they were risking their lives, all of them. I mean, and for a big prize, but it doesn't seem like there was a lot of nastiness there. It seemed like a lot of camaraderie, and that Toby and and Granville and Gardner and the like were part of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's like combat people. You know, these guys are in war. They go through this incredibly hard experience. And every day, you know, they're risking their life to be out there and they're facing all these challenges and the difficulty of it and how hard it is for other people to understand what these guys are going through. Only these guys running the race get it. And they just bond together, like, and you know, Pyle, to his credit, you know, he was a lot of bad things, but he wasn't racist,
right?
And he assigned them to tents, you know, white, black. He didn't care. It was only when they got to Texas that he pulled the blacks from the, you know, the mixed tents and put them in their own tent, and that. Because he had to, if you want to keep doing the race. But he was, to me, he was very modern in his outlook. And, you know, he was a horrible businessman. He treated the runners badly because, you know, he didn't wash their sheets. He didn't get them the proper food, blah, blah, blah. But in this one instance, for racism, I mean, he fought that with his whole soul. And so that was one thing that he should be remembered for.
We're talking with Charles Kastner. His book is Race Across America, Eddie Gardner and the Great Bunyan Derby. This is almost 20 years before Jackie Robinson broke Major League Baseball's color barrier. What kind of doors were opened by the participants in the Bunyan Derbies?
Oh, I mean, can you explain a little what the kind of doors were open? I mean, the guys who finished the race or something?
Yeah, and how did Eddie Gardner and his peers help raise awareness of the issues of African-American athletes?
I mean, it was in the black press. The white press ignored it. And so within the black community, Eddie's contribution was known, but outside of the whites, for white people, that really wasn't what they wanted to focus on. It really, when, you know, Eddie, Sammy, Toby Cotton, when those guys finished, it really didn't change their lives much. I mean, they were still black, in which limited their access to jobs and so forth. So they had this one brief moment where their example was shining, it was a shining thing. But then once the race was finished, they were pretty much done and they kind of faded away.
Well, one question I was going to ask you is what value went on to the winners? I mean, Johnny Sallow got a short-lived position as a policeman in his hometown of Passaic. How many other people could you say 5 years later, wow, he really benefited because he was one of the top 10 winners of the Bunyan Derby? It doesn't seem like there were many that could say that.
No, I mean, Andy Payne, the winner, he got $25,000. And he used that money to lift the mortgage off the family farm. He went to school. And I think he had a nice life after that. And that $25,000 really changed his life. Sallow, of course, he was a policeman. He got hit in the head with a baseball and died in 1931, I guess. So that was it for him. And the rest of them just kind of faded away. And I mean, you know, they got $1,000 or so, and that was fine. But it materially didn't change their lives. I mean, it changed their outlook.
Yeah,
ever because they'd accomplished such an incredibly hard thing.
Because we've talked on the show a lot about the 6 day bicycle races of that era, and you know, we have these double marathon a day race.
Yeah.
That there seemed to be a lot of people who were chasing the money in a different way than athletes chase the money now. They were chasing the money because it could so totally change the lives of them and their families for years and years and years. So that when you think about it, how sad it is that Pyle's sideshows didn't work with his dancing girls and his reviews and the like, that all that money was wasted, that if that had gone to the athletes, how many more of them might have benefited from this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. It's a good point. Yeah, I just find it was a very interesting time. And as a runner, I understand and respect how difficult the job of running across America is or was. And I'm just in awe of these guys. When you think you have a hard day, right, and things think they're going tough, well, I'm out in the Mojave Desert in the middle of a dust storm. And, I could barely see, but I would keep going. I'm going over the Rockies at 7,000 feet. And, it's just like these guys were tough. And they persevered and got through something. It may not have changed their lives, in the dollar sense, but it changed their outlook on what they could accomplish. I mean, it must have given them some kind of a self-confidence that, Jesus, if I can run across America,
right.
My 9-to-5 job can't be that bad.
Right. So. Well, one of the last things I really wanted to ask you today is that I have a friend, Fred Mason, who's an ultra-marathoner, friend, lives in New Brunswick. And he talked, he gave a presentation to Sport Literature Association about how many calories he burns, how much food he had to eat.
Right.
A lot of these guys didn't have support networks with them, and they were only getting whatever Pyle was given, and they were actually sometimes begging food from people.
Right.
I think when you talk about that and the Mojave Desert and running through rain and snow and through the Catskills and what was it, the 71-mile one, that
Yeah, one thing with 75 miles, he had 5 days in a row of plus 50-mile runs. And by the time those guys got to, I think, the fourth race, they were finishing at 2 or 3 in the morning. They would get up at 7. They were so groggy, they had to hold them up before the race started so they could get on down the road. I mean, talk about pushing the limits. I mean, these guys wrote the book on that.
Yeah. Well, Charles, it's a great book, and we want to thank you, and I hope that we'll get to talk to you again. It's from Syracuse University Press. It's called Race Across America, Eddie Gardner and the Great Bunyan Derbies, and as it says, a truly epic book. So thank you very much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Charles Kastner with us here on Downtown on Sports Lit 101 on this Wednesday afternoon, 12 to go before the top of the hour, and another author next week, Bruce, Pat Malgaris will be with us.
Yeah, and it'll be a book we talked about called Chasing Excellence, about the life of Joe Vigil, a legendary U.S. distance coach. I knew his name for years. I had no idea what a remarkable man, what a remarkable story it is. So Pat will fill us in on some more of it.